that if he can do this, what's going to happen to me? So it went into a really deep dive of so much. And that was through therapy of understanding, you know, hey, why didn't we know he was even remotely sad? That's crazy. That's crazy. You know, he couldn't have shared one time, hey guys, I need help. You know, there was never that space. Everything was laughing. Everything was funny. Everything was jokes. Dina brought up this the other day that I totally don't remember, that I guess Dina came over that day. Which by the way was just, it's okay to cry, guys.
What's my name? What's my name? What's my
In this conversation with Big Little Feelings, we talk about their childhood and how it shows up for them and their parenting. We talk about the importance of feeling seen, of identifying our needs as adults and children, and teaching children to meet their needs. As always, if you want to ask your own questions, join the conversation, get the extended version of these episodes early, or you want one-on-one coaching with me, sign up to the Patreon. And at the end of this episode, I share my vision for the world. There is explicit language used in this episode.
Welcome to Mr. Chaz's Leadership, Parenting, and Teaching podcast, where I introduce you to the people who can help you on your parenting, leadership, teaching, nannying, caregiving journey. Today, you guys are in for a treat, an intimate conversation with the amazing duo, Big Little Feelings, Kristen and Dina, but I will have them introduce themselves and then we can get started with the conversation. Go ahead, y'all.
Do it.
Yes. So first of all, we're big fans of Mr. Chaz. That's what you guys should know. Dina and I text each other all the time, every day. And we're like, did you see the Mr. Chaz post? So that's first thing about us you should know. And the second thing about us you should know is we're on Instagram primarily at Big Little Feelings. And Dina is a child therapist. And I am a mom of two toddlers. And we just created this space, this page where we're really working towards, like Mr. Chaz, it's like so symbiotic, breaking generational cycles. But in that process, really having helpful tips, real life stuff that's happening every single day. I think every parent wants that long-term goal of healthy, resilient children, but it's really hard in the moment when your kid is screaming at you and you're triggered, or really hard in the moment to be like, all right, how does this apply to a pacifier? You know what I mean? And so we really had this goal of our page to combine the two, where yes, our goal and all of our strategies will have healthy, resilient kids and also help you through these day-to-day struggles that so many of us didn't necessarily know what to do.
Well, great. I love the introduction. And so today we're actually, it's going to be a little bit of a different format than what people have been used to with the podcast. We're going to get to know a little bit more about you guys as individuals, as parents, as people, because you have this huge following of people that follow you every day and watch your stories religiously. I think I was watching you like screenshot at one of your stories, and I would see hundreds of thousands of people who are watching your stories every day, and you have, I think, 1.4 million followers on Instagram. And I think people, when they're watching Instagram, like, wow, like these amazing people that I look up to, and people sometimes like will idolize those people, and maybe even have, you know, or and kind of disconnect themselves from the person because like, wow, like there's no way that I can come from where I came from and my upbringing and get to the point where they're at. And so I want to unpack your stories a little bit more, but also going into the parenting philosophies and the practical tips. But that brings me to my first question. And before I even get there with the first question, seeing as we did have a little bit of conversation maybe a month or two ago. So I am going to, at this point, give a trigger warning. that it is going to get, you know, it is going to get heavy. They're going to talk about, you know, personal things that they've gone through and thought process and things like, you know, mental health and suicide may come up. So this is the trigger warning. And I'm sure that they, as you're listening to this podcast, you're going to hear how this kind of progresses. But now,
and if this is you, by the way, maybe I just have a personal disclaimer that if this is you, and if you heard that word suicide and it's just, ooh, kind of hits you fresh and raw, and you think you need to close out, but you're maybe kind of like ashamed to, or you're like, nah, I should be able to handle this. Don't let that happen. You can come back to this anytime. Revisit it later on after you've processed and you feel like you're ready and you're like, okay, because I know for a lot of us who've been affected by suicide and it's really raw and real going into it and you're like, ooh, kind of shocked and not ready, it's okay to close out. It's okay to listen to this later.
Thanks for speaking on that, Kristen. All right. So I'm going to start off with a pretty open question and just ask you, you know, what's your parenting philosophy? You know, like, what are your goals as parents? And talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I would say, you know, the way we work and the way that we parent, both what we teach and what we try to do in our everyday lives. And like when I'm here today, I'm kind of taking off my therapist hat. I'm just speaking as a mom, as a human on this earth. I mean, I want to raise my little guy with respect so that he knows that he's able to share any feelings, any thoughts, any struggles that come his way. I'm going to be there for him. He's not going to be in trouble or, you know, punished or shamed for it. And yeah, I hope to be able to create a safe, like a truly safe place for him to be him as he grows up. So that's, you know, I would say we're kind of like a blend of positive parenting, gentle parenting, respectful parenting. I have a history of neuroscience, so we bring that in too.
I think there's this one quote that, gosh, I wish I could credit it right now. I feel really badly. But there's some quote out there, I don't know who it is, but it's, you know, the goal of respectful parenting or whatever you want to call it, because we really are a blend, but whatever we're trying to do, the goal of it is that someday when your kid is 16 or 20 or 35 and something, they get themselves into huge trouble, that they run to you and they call you first rather than run away from you and hide, afraid of you and what your reaction is going to be. I want them to know that no matter what they've done, no matter what they do, maybe that's not okay. We're going to fix it together. We made this mistake. This is not okay. Maybe I won't let you if it involves safety or something like that. You know, there's still going to be consequences, like logical consequences, by the way, not punishment, shame consequences. So that, again, you know, they're always going to come and run to me first. And they're never going to feel alone or what should I do or just deeply rooted in that shame cycle. You know, I was always the bad kid from an early age, like very, very early. And what ends up happening is when you feel like you're such a bad kid, you do bad things. And then to make it worse, you're really alone and you have nobody that's helping you. And so you learn to be really tough and to help yourself and to kind of like F everybody else. And it's just this horrible cycle that keeps going. So my personal sort of goal, and you know, I can see my two kids. I have one you'd maybe categorize as a good girl, and you'd have one that normally would traditionally maybe be called a bad girl. And I don't want the good girl to have so much pressure that she crumbles and breaks and falls apart and has to live up to my standards. And I don't want my bad girl to be crushed and run away from me and think she's in trouble.
Yeah. So you guys talked a little bit about your, you know, where that comes from. I heard a little bit of that in your answer, Kristen and Dina. And so let's just go ahead and jump into it now. You know, tell where does that, you know, parenting philosophy come from? You know, tell me about a little bit about your journey growing up, you know, and how does your childhood show up in your parenting? I know that's a lot of heavy questions, but I'm giving you guys space to just go and talk.
We love this space, by the way, because it's difficult and we always try to overcome it, but we don't want to constantly every day be like, oh, our childhood was, you know, traumatic. And yet Instagram is such sort of a dangerous place because you see these two very like soft-spoken, calm women talking about gentle parenting. And it's so important for people to know that A, we're human beings who mess up, but Dina and I specifically are two human beings who came from homes that could not be more opposite than, you know, the way that the BLF way, if you will. Do you want to share your first? You want me to come first?
I don't know.
What do
you prefer? We're gonna be real awkward about it.
My emo.
Okay.
Yeah. So I didn't grow up in a home that was the whole kind of like respectful, gentle parenting way.
Dina, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I'm having a hard time hearing you. I can hear you better.
You pulled it closer. Maybe this will help.
Yeah. Perfect. There you go.
Okay.
I also have a really soft voice that like doesn't carry that well.
Then mine's so loud that
I'm gonna try to project.
Yeah.
So I didn't grow up in a home that followed the BLF way. That was this whole respectful, gentle parenting way. I grew up with parents who had so much love in their hearts, but were under so much stress and came from their own childhoods where, you know, their emotions were not cared for. Nobody saw what was going on inside for them or helped them feel safe enough to be authentic, to share their feelings and understand that they don't have to suffer alone. So for me growing up, you know, it was a really heavy home that I grew up in. There wasn't a lot of happiness. There was a ton of tension between my parents. And as I grew up, my way to cope with that was really to become, as Kristen was saying, the good girl. So I tried so hard. I worked extremely hard, like worked myself to death in school to get good grades. I, you know, didn't eat a lot so that I was really thin and looked good and looked the way I thought people wanted me to look. And really throughout it, just lost sight of myself and my own voice to try and please everyone around me and make my parents happy, like as if my performance could somehow make up for what everything else that was going on. So as things progressed and I went to this really challenging high school in LA, actually that's where we met. We went to a really intense, stressful high school and it was all about success. And for me, that was all I knew. So I was like, okay, great. Like I'm at home, let's do this. Let's be the best at whatever we're doing. And what ended up happening is in my junior year of high school, I was being recruited for softball, which we both played. That's again how we met. We like softball is our life. That's a different story. But we were on really intense teams where like you wanted to get recruited by a college coach. And if in the middle of the game you made one error, they would call timeout, you were benched, and you're not going back in for days or weeks, or it could be months, and you lose the opportunity to show off for coaches. So extremely high pressure, mixed with parents really not getting along, mixed with the hardest year of high school where you're trying to get into college. And then on top of that, my very first breakup. So all that together, I just crumbled. I fell into such a deep depression. And it went on for a while and it got so bad. I asked my dad if I could go to therapy. And his answer was, "You spoiled brat. I've given you everything. You have a loving family. How dare you be sad?" So I was alone, you know, and it ended up getting so bad that I had a plan. I was like, I can't do this anymore. And I had everything together one day and I was about to really go through with it and I'm getting like sad thinking about this, but I had this really deep primal feeling inside. I don't know how to describe it. It was like deep in the pit of me that I just wanted to meet my kids. you know, that was the one thing that made it so I stuck around. And I was like, I don't know what this is. I think I need to listen to it. I just want to see who my kids are. I don't see a purpose, but I'm going to stay. So that ended up being what kind of stopped me in the moment from going through with it. And, you know, a lot of kids aren't that lucky that they stop. And yeah, I'm lucky because I ended up kind of naturally coming out of it. I didn't have support. I didn't have people that I really talked to. I didn't have a therapist. I didn't have parents who understood. So I'm lucky that I kind of made it out of that. And I'll be really honest, like, therapist hat totally off here. I had to go to therapy after that. I didn't go until I was about 24 and went for 7 straight years to be able to work through that voice, that shame. And that's what I ended up realizing is this is such a voice of shame that tells me to kill myself, honestly. And, you know,
also when you were younger,
yeah,
there was like a very big connection between not only being a good girl, but being quiet and also not loud and definitely not vocal with your feelings. So if you were crying or if you were upset, it was immediate punishment, whether that was whatever the punishment was, timeouts or something, just, you know, being yelled at or being just kind of even there, right? You needed to be quiet, you needed to be good, and you needed to feel happy to be accepted.
I needed to be happy. And so, I mean, all that makes so much sense in that I just wouldn't have tools to be able to deal with really intense natural emotions, you know? So yeah, it took a long time. It took years to really build that up and work through it. And it's still, even today, just an ongoing process that I nurture and try to take care of.
And you're also a mom, correct?
I am. Yeah, I'm a new mom. I have a 5-month-old baby.
So, and it's, you know, beautiful. So you finally have, you know, that thing that you were thinking of, that you just, that was kind of your driving force, you know, when you were younger, to meet your, you know, to meet your child. You've finally been able to do that. But I, you know, I'm thinking a little bit more about your story of just, you know, feeling like you had to be the good girl, because that's those are the people who aren't paid attention to as much, where teachers or, you know, parents will just say, like, you know, she's getting good grades, you know, she's in softball. And that's, you know, and that's the thing that we focus on too, right? When, like, you know, the parents get together, you know, talking, and oh, so how's the family? Like, those are the things that we'll focus on. Oh, you know, she's doing great. She's, you know, she's in softball. She's, you know, really driven in school, but not really seeing the other, the kind of the underlying struggles there. And like, yeah, they never had it from themselves, but having to just hold all of that in. And then I'm sure it took a lot of courage to ask for the therapist too, right?
And totally.
And then being shut down probably, you know, caused you to go further inward.
Well, yeah, it just makes you feel like there's no solution, right? There's no way out.
And also something is wrong with me. There's something wrong with me. There's something wrong with my brain. Sadness isn't something people are supposed to feel. That's, my parents apparently don't feel it. When, you know, human beings don't really share about it that much. Actually, one pivotal moment in Dina and our friendship, we played softball together on that high school team. I did the opposite. I was like the rebel who was like, F you, you know, and I did the opposite, pushed back against authority. And that's why we're a great team, by the way. but there was this moment in my parents' kitchen, and I can see it so very clearly, that Dina was 16, I was 17, and she shared with me. She shared this plan that she had, and then she shared the deep pain that she had, and then she shared, getting a little emotional, just, I can literally see it, this pain and this pressure. And, you know, I felt that pressure too, and just reacted in a different way. And it was this very vulnerable moment that connected us forever, because people typically
shove those down when we don't talk about them. And this is kind of a new thing that people even start to talk about this. Back then, we were talking about clothes and boys and success and getting your scholarship to Georgetown or wherever you were going. And we were really bonded in these vulnerable moments, being able to share the pressure, the pain, the sadness, and everything from that moment on. It was really a brave moment.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Wow.
Too, you know, like when I came out of it, because it was such a, I just didn't realize why I would have been so depressed and how this pushing down of emotions, which, by the way, that's the literal Latin definition of depression, is to push down when you break up the words. So I kind of had my dad's narrative, right? As like, how could this happen to me? I'm a girl who has everything. Like, I shouldn't be sad. I shouldn't be depressed. And I went to a place of, it's my brain. It's my brain that has a problem. But later, as I, you know, dedicated my whole life after coming out of this depression to helping kids who feel this way, to helping parents who don't have the tools, because nothing's wrong with them. They just didn't have the tools given to them when they're growing up. I was like, I'm going to dedicate my whole life to this. Lo and behold, it's not just your brain. I mean, your brain gets shaped by your early life experiences for sure, but relationships have so much to do with it. Safe relationships, relationships where you can be yourself, where you can honestly share without being punished, like, has so much to do with who you become and how you view yourself and how you problem solve later.
Hmm. Now, I have a question. So you said you eventually went to therapy 7 years later.
Yeah.
Was that the first time you saw some light at the end of the tunnel? Did it take, you know, did it take several years of therapy to, you know, to see the light? Like, when did you start to feel like, oh, like, I get it now. I understand. Like, I see the way out of it. Like, I can, how, like, I'm learning the tools, I'm learning the skills, like, I'm starting to feel better. When, do you remember, was there a moment?
I remember the first time I went to my therapist, it was walking out of that first session, to me, was like immediate relief. She had made me feel so safe that I could just be honest about the fact that I was struggling. And I had never really shared that aside from Kristen, like, I hid that. I tried to look like I had it all together, like I was totally fine and thriving, when in fact I was really crumbling and suffering on the inside. So I remember session one, I felt relief of just being able to like say it out loud to somebody who kind of got it. And from there, it was the relief every time of being able to like slowly be honest, slowly share my feelings and not feel like I'm crazy or I'm bad or something's wrong with me. And over time, like slowly building those tools, so that out of session, now I'm using different tools, like I'm seeing kind of different outcomes, and that's interesting and makes me want to do it more. But really, it was years to, I don't want to say quiet the voice of like, when I make a mistake, when I feel like I'm in trouble, a voice that says, you know what, you should kill yourself, you're horrible. So it's been just a process working through that, where now finally, I think with the birth of my son, a little bit has like, it's really shifted, where I'm like, oh, it's really quiet now. That voice is like really distant, but it was a process.
And the 7 years thing, by the way, was, it was that she went to therapy every week for seven years.
So 7 years
straight.
Yeah.
Of therapy, which is a lot of work. It's a lot of work.
It is. But so worth it. I look now like I'm the first one in my family to have gone and really felt the pain to break that generational cycle. And if you look back in my family, my mom, my grandma, it goes on and on. There is so much depression. There's suicide that runs in my family. Mm. So it makes sense, you know, and it's hard work.
Mm. Wow. Thank you for sharing that. Over in the comments right now, Tiffany mentioned, now I've learned perfectionism is a trauma response, and Kim responded to that and said, I can totally see that in my mother now that you say that. Wow. And so I love that we're having this conversation, and I think it's going to spark more conversations. Now, so Dina, you were the good girl who went through, you know, these challenges and had to kind of depress and push down your emotions, and you shared how that impacted you. And we talk all the time about how children are different and they may respond different, and individual children may need different things. And even just the way that they respond, you know, different temperaments may respond differently to, you know, different strategies that you use, right? And so I want to hear now from Kristen on the other end of the spectrum, the quote unquote bad girl of Big Little Feelings. How did you respond? You know, tell me about your, you know, upbringing and maybe in how it intersects with Dina's, and talk to me about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, Dina and I grew up in a very sort of similar, well, we both were in Los Angeles. We both went to the same school, so the same high pressure environment. My sister was the good kid. I was the bad kid. But kind of more importantly, I guess, is I was raised in this culture of success and achievement and being the best and looking the best too. Everything needed to look really shiny and great on the surface. And you know, you needed the right car and the right house and the right kids. You know, everything needed to look just so, and the kids needed to be clean and they needed to be quiet and they needed their scholarships to Harvard. And you didn't think outside the box. You didn't think outside the lines. You did what you were told, and you're supposed to look that way. It's for show, and it felt like it was for show. And you know, my dad was raised in the exact same way. He grew up in the exact same suburb of Los Angeles with the same kind of parents who it seemed like had two kids to kind of do it, the token kids with the token house with the lawyers and the this and the that. And there just wasn't a whole lot, you know. I can remember so many times that if you were feeling sad or angry or had an opinion about anything, by the way, I was definitely punished all the time. And I had opinion about a lot of things because that's, I guess, what makes me the bad kid. So I was punished a lot, especially in comparison to my sisters, because I just have a lot of opinions. I still do. And Mr. Chaz, this brings me to a great post or story that you did, which was the things that I am praised for now and the things that got us to perhaps together 1.5 million followers in about a year's time, that pushing those boundaries, those having those opinions. You know, we met early on with some social media strategists that said, don't do this, don't do that. And I was the one that was like, Dina, you trust me to be like, fuck this? Like, let's do the opposite. And she's like, yeah, let's do it. Let's be different. And so now I'm really bad. Now I'm praised for all of those same things that I was really punished for close to 20 years, if not 30 years, just through shame. And so, you know, I didn't really realize that though. I thought we had a great house. I thought we had a great car. I loved clothes. I loved all the superficial things too. And I think I would have raised my kids the same way. I really do. I thought my family was funny, thought we were dark. I thought we were different, thought we were cool. We were like a different family that was weird. And it was a huge turning point 7 years ago. And I'm so happy to share this. People on our page do ask about my parents. And so I do appreciate you giving me the space to share this, because I am wanting to share this part of me and my story, which is 7 years ago, my father died by suicide. And we did not see it coming from anywhere. We didn't know that he was sad. We did not know that he was in pain. We knew he had a back injury, so he was in physical pain, but we did not know there was emotional pain. We did not know there was, now I can look back, social anxiety. We did not know, based on, you know, the letters that he wrote later, that there was this pressure to have more
and more money and more this, and that this is the best thing he could do for us, because then now we'll, he can't get more. He's stuck in his career. There's no more money. There's nowhere else to go. More. It was a real eye opener, and it turned me literally around in a great way, because I had to stop, because I have always been identical to my dad. My sister was very much like my mom, and I was identical to my dad. And I was like, holy shit, if he can do this, what's going to happen to me? So it went into a really deep dive of so much. And that was through therapy, of understanding, you know, hey, why didn't we know he was even remotely sad? That's crazy. That's crazy. You know, he couldn't have shared one time, hey, guys, I need help. You know, there was never that space. Everything was laughing. Everything was funny. Everything was jokes. Dina brought up this the other day that I totally don't remember, that I guess Dina came over that day. Whew. Which, by the way, was just, oh. No, it's okay, right, guys? Dina came over right away. She had a plate of warm pasta in her hands, homemade pasta, and she knew exactly what to do, which was like warm food, sit down, rub your back, you know, don't say things like, oh, he's in a better place. Oh, well, this is for, you know, she was just such an angel in that time. But she mentioned that I said the words, I thought he was going to move to the beach, because that's what he was sharing with us, was happiness, joy. I'm going to move to the beach. I'm going to get a condo. And he shoved down all of those feelings of I'm struggling, I'm in pain, I need help, let's, you know, anything like that. And so through therapy, I discovered that we had been raised that way our whole life. And that's where a lot of my destructive behavior came from. You know, if I felt sad, if I felt angry, if I felt alone, I did not go to my parents, I did not go to anyone. I went out and I did some destructive bad girl things. And it was really transformational to basically reparent myself. And when you feel sad, what do? It's like those memes on the internet, you know what I mean? Where you're like, the therapist is like, what do you do when you feel sad? And you're like, I don't know, binge eat 8 episodes of whatever and then eat a tub of ice cream and then, you know, whatever. And it's like, no, that's not the right answer. It was a really reparenting process of, I'm feeling sad. What do I do when I feel sad? Right, I go for a walk. I do this healthy coping skill. I take some deep breaths. I cry, and hey, it's okay to cry. I call a friend. I get support. You know how pivotal that is? And that's something my dad did not do, never thought he could do. Never thought he could call a friend and say, hey, I'm struggling, I need help. And so through that process, then it just naturally came then with my kids to, you know, make sure that anything that they're feeling, anything that they even did, no matter how bad it was, they could come to me. They know that there's no shame. They know that there's no punishment. They know that then, because they've had me as a supportive figure later on in life, when they are sad or angry, they will turn to another friend or their partner or their caregiver. It's going to feel natural for them to do so.
Mm. Wow, Kristen. That was a really powerful story. And just hearing how, you grew up and it was, you know, felt like everything, you had the perfect life. It almost does sound, you know, almost kind of the opposite of Dina's story. You felt like everything was great until this pivotal event happened, and you realized that it wasn't. And it sounds like you saw yourself and your dad, and it in that way you kind of knew that you had to grow in the ways that he hadn't or couldn't, and so that you could, you know, so that you could pass on something different to your children.
Yeah, I think it can be very, very, very easy to continue to do the same generational cycles the way that my parents did and the next parents did I really think I would have done the same thing. I didn't see anything really, you know, that wrong or that off. It would have just continued. For me, it took something huge for that to happen, but hopefully maybe for somebody else, it won't be something that huge and it will just be whatever, some gut feeling. And, you know, you can make that left turn now or start to slowly learn about it or understand it. I think that there's so much judgment in the parenting space and in the mommy world and the this world or just parenthood in general. You're like, well, how could these parents possibly, you know, spank their kids? And you should never spank your kids, never, ever. But, you know, some parents, some people just continue through. That's what you've been raised on. There's not necessarily an aha moment yet. And I think that hopefully through our advocacy for all of us, like what you're doing, Chaz, what all of us are trying to do, as many of us as possible, somebody will see something that will go, aha. And that's where that generational cycle will kind of, you know, begin to chip away.
I'm going
to
add into that. So I actually often, as someone who got spanked, as I grew up through life, as someone who did, you know, get spanked in childhood, my body, when I'm angry, gets these really like physically tense, aggressive kind of urges. And it's been my journey to like really just undo that and rewire a different anger response. Cause it was all that I knew from growing up was just chaos, explosion, yelling. So I feel so bad for all the past boyfriends that I had. When I was mad, I yelled. And I think probably people on our Instagram see me and I'm like a very calm, gentle voice, you know, therapist. I've had to undo my yelling and rewire a totally different response.
Yeah. And you know, what you guys are both talking about, it becomes our default setting, right? The way that we were raised becomes our default setting. And unless you recognize that you want to reprogram and change it, then it will be what you pass on. You will pass on your default setting to your children. And, you know, unfortunately for, you know, you guys had, you know, really, there were these big events that, your dad passing away and, your events, Kristen, with, you know, what you went through, but it could also be a Big Little Feelings post or Mr. Chaz post that, you know, is that aha moment that it's like, maybe I should, you know, do something different. Maybe that's something to think about, right? And that's a lot, I think I just posted literally just conversation that we're having today. So you guys follow my post, you know, you should have the one I posted today.
Where,
okay, so look, they're true fans. See, they weren't even like,
yeah, I'm really a true fan. It's honestly a little weird, so I'm gonna stop being weird.
So no, you guys are good. I love it. I'm fans of you guys too. So like, you know, it's really thank you guys so much for sharing your story of how you, the things that happened in your lives to, you know, switch off that default setting, or not even switch off, but just become aware of the default setting so that you can start rewiring and reprogramming your brain so that you can give a different default setting to your children and generations and, you know, generations of your family.
And I think it's worth mentioning here too, that it's not like this big thing happened and then the shift happened and boop, now I'm a perfect parent. And, the shift happened and I run Big Little Feelings. I think we try as hard as we can to make it really clear that, you know, all of us, Dina and myself included, when triggers happen, and typically triggers, tantrums, screaming, loud noises, maybe it's clutter. When a trigger happens in your everyday life, for us too, that default setting, like Dina just said, that anger, like maybe even a desire to hit, right? That's going to wash over her body. That's still going to, or yelling. And I'm sure as Dina gets, you know, more into this parenting thing, I'm sure she's going to slip up and yell at some point, by the way. And same with me. So mine is abandonment, because I was left alone a lot. So my trigger is to just be like, peace out, I'm out, like, I can't handle it, I'm done, I can't be a mom anymore. And so, you know, that turning point, it's like, it turns into that desire and that exploration and that learning. But then comes some hard work, and you'll never be perfect. And I think when we try, when we see certain pages or posts on Instagram and we're like, well, I mean, I yelled at my kid yesterday, so I'm just going to keep scrolling because this is impossible. What did you say, Mr. Chaz? It's like, be a something. What was your?
I was waiting for my opportunity to say it. It's like my tagline. Don't be a perfectionist.
Do it.
Be an improvenist. The goal isn't to get every day. The goal is to improve a little every day.
Exactly that. Where, you know, we say we have these big turning points. We have these big moments. That doesn't mean we just became like a gentle, wonderful parents overnight. What it means is, you know, if one time you feel yourself and you're about to lose your shit, just lose your shit, and this one time today, you instead were like, and you brought yourself back down. And you didn't have to be Susie Sunshine. You didn't have to do perfect crafts and perfect activities or something like this. But one time today, you wanted to yell and you didn't. Celebrate the shit out of that, because then maybe tomorrow you're noticing, by the way, the good thing you did. When you notice the good things you did and don't harp on the bad things you did, you're going to get more good. So maybe tomorrow, two times you were about to yell and you didn't. Like, every teeny tiny little inch you make, you celebrate that and you just keep going.
So, okay, that brings me to my next question is, so I want to know more about, so what was that journey? We talked about your origin story, right? And then you're like, okay, default setting. I recognize it. I want to do different. I want to rewire. I want to reprogram. What was that process like for you? What was, is that rewire? Tell me more about that.
For me, it was being able to share when I'm angry. Because usually the anger would be held inside and it would be directed towards myself, right? And I would do kind of mean things like make myself run a lot, like 20 miles of running, or restrict my eating, or things like that that were just mean to myself ultimately. So my big thing was I couldn't really share when I felt angry, when I felt hurt as a kid, which was a lot, right? Because we had such a volatile home and nobody noticed how that would impact me. Nobody stopped to think, oh, all this yelling, all this screaming, all this aggression, like, how does my kid feel in this? You know? So me finding my voice and trusting myself and experimenting slowly, little by little, of speaking up, you know, like, hey, that actually hurts when you do that. Or, hey, that's actually not okay with me. I don't like that. And speaking up more often. So that's kind of been part of my process and my rewiring.
And when that comes to parenting, by the way, I think how that looks in real life, we're going to feel angry as parents. That's going to happen.
Yep.
And just like we tell our kids, it's okay to feel angry. Hey, it's okay to feel angry as a parent. I mean, anger is okay. And it's the way that we portray it, or the way that we sort of, if we're angry and we say, go get in the timeout now, or, you know, something like that, it's behavior, I guess, kind of like kids, right? But if you're feeling really angry and you're able to kind of use some tools that I personally learned through therapy, but there's a lot of, it's in our course, but there's also, I mean, Google search it, notice your feet on the ground and say, you know what? Lulu, I'm noticing that I'm starting to feel angry. I'm going to step over into this room right now. I'm going to take some deep breaths right now. How great of a learning experience is that for your child? And then you're not pushing it down and going to explode later. You're knowing that as a parent, I'm feeling angry. I'm going to try my very best to model something that's actually healthy, remove myself, take some deep breaths, and come back. Or ask for help. I don't know if anybody can take those kids, but say, you know what? I'm noticing my breaking point. My husband did this 2 days ago. He was like, I'm gonna go to the park, and then I'm gonna do this, and then I'm gonna do that, then I'm gonna do this. And he texted me halfway through and he said, you know, I'm being pushed to my limit. They're tantruming a lot. They're screaming a lot. I can feel myself rising. We're gonna get Chick-fil-A, and then we're gonna come home and watch a movie. And I was like,
What a great pivot, because a lot of us think, I need to create this perfect day and I need to keep going. And no, they need the playground. What an amazing pivot to say, to notice it first, be okay with that anger, and then pivot in any way you need to.
Yeah. So you guys both kind of mentioned, it sounds like tools that you learned in therapy. Was there any other part of your journey to, you know, help you learn and grow and rewire? Was it just therapy?
Mine was actually a boundary. Having a husband who, for the first time, a boyfriend or a partner or whoever, who said, whoa, the way that you're expressing your anger is not okay. It's okay to be angry. It's not okay to yell at me. And that was the first time a boundary around it had ever really been held for me. And it made me pause and go, oh, okay, you know what? You're right. Like, I got to start using these tools and figuring this out and taking a pause. If I really can't share in a constructive way, I got to pause. And which, by the way, that's very hard at the beginning. Sure. And over time, the more you practice, it becomes a little bit easier.
For me, truly the best education I've ever had, you can learn all the things, but the best education I've ever had in all of this was parenting my kids. So, you know, I'll be honest, I don't care about myself even 5% as much as I care about those kids. I mean, probably more like 1%, right? Like, I'm gonna burn myself into the ground and I'll do anything for those kids. And once you start kind of the language that we're all now kind of doing, which is, I hear you're sad. It's okay to be sad. You say this, and if you have a toddler and you follow these kinds of ways of parenting, you're probably saying this, I don't know, 150 times a day. And so when you're saying it and you're really feeling it, like, I see her, and 10% of the time I'm like, oh God, this is really annoying and grating, but I try my best to really feel like, sure, this is ridiculous, the crayon broke in half, but I see you're upset. Like, I get it. You wanted that crayon to be this way and it's not. And you know what? I'm here for you. And that's sad. You're angry. And when you say it enough and you see it enough, it almost becomes ingrained into yourself. So that then, like, naturally, I start to freak out over something. And I'm like, you know what? It's okay for you to freak out right now. That's okay. This might be... It's just the best learning I've had is actively practicing this kind of way of speaking and doing things with my own kids all day long. Just naturally flows to not only yourself, but to others, right? And now I see other people. I see my husband. I see somebody else. And normally I'd be irritated or annoyed, or I'd be like, dude, it's not that big of a deal. Why are you that upset? Like, champ up, let's go. And instead now, I'm compassionate, which I don't think I used to be. Yeah. I did not before I had kids. Yeah. I was just like, dude, you're overreacting. Stop being a dick. So now I'm compassionate towards others and myself. It's been awesome.
Wow. Lots of things there. So, you know, one, Kristen, I heard that it was someone else who cared a lot about holding a boundary that helped you kind of recognize, oh, wow, that really helped you realize, okay, helped you recognize kind of your own behavior and kind of where you need it to grow. And it sounds like when he was communicating that to you, it wasn't him, you know, yelling like, why are you yelling at me? You know, it sounded like he was regular, you know, he was very regulated. He heard what you said, but he was very regulated in himself. And that just, you know, reminds me of just how we should really speak to anyone, but it's especially important for children that, like, when we're dysregulated, they're screaming, they're tantruming, like, yelling and adding to more chaos isn't going to help, you know, the light bulb switch off. So that's, you know, thank you for sharing that. And then also to you, and I think I completely just switched that. Why did I said, I know.
You see how much of people pleasers we are, though? So we just were like, yeah, that's okay. You can call me whatever you want to call me. It's okay. Yeah, I'm a good girl. I'm not going to correct you.
Thank you. Well, please correct me because I make mistakes all the time. I know.
It's okay. It's okay. It's late at night, by the way. We're all firing with, like, one brain cell. It's okay. We forgive you.
No, it's, I appreciate the grace. I love it. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. So, but that was, so who I was talking about was Dina and her, you know, significant other setting the boundary and being calm. And then with Kristen, I want to say something actually that, something that I heard there, Kristen, and want to almost like Ooh. Challenge you a little bit on it.
No, it's great. I'm excited.
We like it.
Yeah.
So, you know, you mentioned that you know, care and, you know, I completely honor and respect deeply, like how much you care about your children. But you mentioned that you would, you know, you said you would burn yourself into the ground, right? Caring for your children. And, you know, I get where that comes from, but I also want people out there listening and just even want to make a point to say it because of the story you shared earlier that, you know, you matter too as a parent, as an adult, as, you know, you have your own needs as well. And while, you know, it's important for, you know, the responsibilities on us for us to regulate and for us to grow more so that we can grow our children, you know, we're so much more able to do that when we're not burnt into the ground. And so like I would
100%,
you know, I would really encourage any parent, you know, out there to also be mindful of, like, as you are giving it your all, you know, be mindful and aware of how much you actually have, and don't forget.
And I think what I meant to say was, it was kind of that I'm preconditioned to not, because of my childhood, not at all caring about myself, right? And that was pre-parenting. That's kind of what I sort of like meant, or was that preconditioning of, I deserve nothing. I am shameful. I am bad. And it's actually now through parenting, which is interesting, is my self-care personally, at least, is way up high. And I take time every day, and I make sure, and we talk about this all the time, that, you know, I am not a perfect parent at all, but I am quite a patient parent. And I attribute almost 95% of that to, I don't feel guilt saying, hey, I need 2 hours. I need 3 hours. I need to go to the gym. I need to get endorphins. I need to be by myself. I need to not be touched for this amount of time.
I saw your day to yourself.
It's a huge part. So 3 or 4 times a year, I do what we call a solo hotel staycation. So it's just right down the street, has a pool. I take 24 hours, sometimes 48 hours, and just completely by myself, to recharge, to regroup, to feel excited to come home again. You know, when we become parents, we don't stop becoming people. We don't stop having needs. And when you're overwhelmed and you're about to break, that's when you lose your shit. So it's actually been through the reparenting process that I've started to question that narrative that comes so naturally to me of, you deserve nothing. You better push through. And that's what you do.
Yeah. I love it. And I want to ask a question. So what about your husband? Does he get 4 times a year too? Does he get this? He gets the same benefits?
He sure does. He actually just took his hotel staycation. We go to the same hotel. He went 3 days later. The staff was like, hey, you were just here. And they like, don't understand. So he gets the same thing. Before the pandemic, he used to be like, I don't want to be alone. I don't understand. You know, everybody has different needs. He really likes to be around people. So he likes to go camping and do other things. So he always had this, if I take a day, or not if, but I do take a day, and I do it 3 or 4 times a year, if not more. And he always has then his day within the same week and gets to choose whatever he wants to do. But now that we can't see anybody this year, he was like, I'm going to take the hotel staycay. I'm going to go by myself. I'll take anything I can get. Like, I got it. And he came back. He was so refreshed. He was so excited. He had like a glow in his face. You know, it's just super healthy.
Yeah. And that's even another lesson about, you know, children, about people, that like, yeah, even if you get pretty comfortable knowing kind of what your child's needs are, situations, circumstances, you know, growth, can change what those needs are. So we always have to kind of be paying attention, you know, especially as the adults, as the parents, and for, you know, teachers too, because children aren't necessarily, you know, they haven't really built that skill, especially young children, of identifying their needs and then problem solving to meet their needs, right?
And you know what? What is a great way of doing that is modeling, mm-hmm. right? You know, whenever I start to feel really worn down and dragging and exhausted, and you know, yes, this was the way I was raised, but I don't know if it's as much in fatherhood. You'll have to let me know. I don't know. Dads will have to weigh in here. But when I look at motherhood and how it's portrayed on TV and film and in books and on Instagram, I see a haggard mom who's picking up all the socks and getting all the laundry, and she's, you know, exhausted and she's worn out, and then you better make the dinner and then you better pack the lunches. And, you know, a really big turning point, if not for yourself, again, kind of brings up my point, is like, if you do struggle with self-worth, like I tend to do, then a great motivator is, hey, my two daughters are watching me right now. Do I want them to grow up and be mothers and say, you know what motherhood is? Motherhood is running yourself into the ground. That's just what it is. So I'm not going to listen to my needs, and I'm just going to keep going, and I'm going to push. And I want my daughters to grow up and to see that mom has needs too, and mom is being taken care of. And if I had sons, I would want them to see the exact same thing, both mom and dad. Hey, we have needs. We are healthy. We are emotionally regulated. And when you have a need, son, daughter, take care of that need. Say it out loud to somebody. Let somebody help you. Let somebody take over and take that load. And let's get you some help. Let's facilitate that with a hotel stay.
I love it. I love it. You know, and even, you know, if you can't do the hotel stay for whatever reason, I think you can get pretty creative at things you can do at home.
Yep.
You know, I, you know, as we're talking, I'm kind of envisioning, like, what if everyone, like, you know, pampered dad for the day, and then the next week everyone pampered, you know, mom for the day, and kind of did, you know, we, and I think the kids could have fun too. You know, imagine your little 3-year-old bringing you breakfast and in bed, and, you know, all of that, I think could be, you know, and the, everyone kind of pitching in a little bit more to, you know, to give mom or dad that day off. And I think it would also be a pretty cool idea, maybe, on to get everyone involved in the spirit of modeling, but also in the spirit of role playing, is, you know, maybe the children have a day too, and they get to pick a day too. Even though I'm sure you feel like their day is every day.
Yeah, but you can have like I love it. You can have like a special yes day or something, yeah. You know, where you get to, all right, it's Lulu's day to choose what we do. Like, let's choose the activities. You get to choose the food. Like, you want cookies for breakfast? Cool. It's half a day. Give them cookies for breakfast. I love that idea where we just prioritize each other's needs and wants and desires, and you get like that focus. Like, all right, what do you need today? Let's do it.
Yeah. And on the comment section, I'm just going to, and then we're going to wrap up. This has been a really great conversation, guys. So Noah mentioned that, you know, I think all primary caregivers feel frazzled regardless of gender. I know I do. And then another dad said, from a dad with a son and a daughter, I agree. Self-awareness and communication are key. Yes. And that's, you know, that's every relationship, right? That's the relationship with your significant other, relationship with your children. And you know, it's with children, it's something that you're starting to really build. But that starts, as I always, you know, I say more and more, and it's kind of like my vision is to help adults see, guide, and build with children. And, you know, even when Dina, got your name right, even when Dina earlier was saying that, like, the she remembers the light bulb moment when she walked off the therapist, it, you know, she felt seen for the first time, right? And then she was able to go back and start building those skills and learning to, you know, voice her opinion, and, you know, that builds the foundation of trust and you know, communication skills and all of that. So is there anything, any last thing that you guys want to say, you want to leave the audience with, Kristen and Dina, Big Little Feelings? Hmm.
I don't know. What do we have our last thing? I don't know. I think we always wrap. Yes. Yeah, ask you a question.
What is, gonna be heavy, what is the impact that you want to leave on the world?
Ooh. Well, we're big dreamers. So, you know, when we start things, we think really big, and it's our dream and our hope to not only impact, but honestly transform families and interactions and the way that children are even seen and viewed, not only as parents, teachers, caregivers, human beings, teenagers, to see children as human beings that deserve to be seen and heard. And when they're seen and heard, they're going to grow up and be resilient and healthy and emotionally balanced and not feel like I do, where you don't think you deserve anything. You know, we want to change the world, starting with our kids, all the kids, not just our kids. Do you have more to add? That was big. I know that was big.
Because like, that's a hard act to follow. That is, no, I think that's some great to leave it on. This conversation was so great. I think a lot of people are going to feel seen just by listening and hearing this conversation. I appreciate you guys. You know, thank you for being in the space. Thanks for coming on the podcast. I can't wait to collaborate in the future. Our vision, the impact that we want to make on the world, are so aligned. It would be crazy not to continue working together. So I just want to say thank you for everything you do and pushing, you know, moving the needle with your Instagram, your content, your courses, all of it. Love you guys.
Thank you. We love you. And thank you for also creating a very safe space for us to share some personal stories that we've never shared before. So yeah, we really do appreciate a very safe space. And
this is actually the first time I've shared this.
Yeah, we've never shared it before.
In public. It's and great. The good girl part of me is always super hesitant to like really share any of this, but it feels really good, again, to have a place to just like be me. So yeah. Thank you.
Thank you for creating a vulnerable space. And let's collaborate. I don't know. What are you doing tomorrow?
If you play back the story of your life, you'll realize that most of us grew up feeling unseen. So we hid scenes of our lives for fear of being shamed into feeling obscene. So instead of walking in the wisdom of our parents and our great-great-grands, we danced into trouble to the tune of "parents just don't understand." But I envision a world where children truly feel seen by adults, where they feel safe to make mistakes and they can embrace their faults. I envision a world where children can be vibrant or silent, where adults choose guidance over violence, where we build a foundation of trust that elicits an alliance over defiance. Come build that world with me.
What's my name? What's my name? What's my name?